All right, settle in, make yourself comfortable. It is Wednesday morning, and this is The Real Network, the Gareth Cliff Show. Jack Motlanthe is with us.
Yes,
and
sir.
We are ready to take you through all the way until 8 o'clock. Got Ramon popping in. Ramon Cabanac, who is no stranger to controversy online. He'll be joining us in a short while to
always
talk about his recent trip to Russia. I don't know if you saw over the weekend, but Justin Timberlake was arrested for driving under the influence.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a big thing in America. It's a big thing anywhere, but
yeah,
they make a huge fuss, and his mugshot is trending, I see.
Why wouldn't it?
Well, it's not a horrific mugshot. He doesn't look so bad. But
yeah,
apparently, here's the interesting stuff, right? Because they test you when they take you in. Apparently, he had traces of Molly, Poppers, Truvada, and Coke in his bloodstream following his DWI arrest in New York. It's a lot of things.
It's a lot of things.
So this is being reported this morning by a... I don't follow these people, but they came up on my feed. Poo Crave. There they are. Okay? So there's that's not his mugshot, obviously.
Yeah.
But how's that?
How old is this guy? Isn't he's
looking
40-something
now? Let me tell you, he doesn't look so bad.
Yeah, I'm just saying, why won't he act his age? Like, what's going on? Like, he's married with kids and stuff?
What is Truvada, and why don't I know about that drug at all? Let me see what Truvada is. I got to look this up. Truvada, okay, so here we go. It's a combination of M-tricetabine and tenofovir. Disoproxil fumarate. Whatever that is, that sounds rough. Okay, so apparently it is an HIV medication to help control HIV infection. Lowers your chance of getting HIV complications, improves your quality of life, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so maybe he was on this stuff as a preventative. I don't know.
He was having a wild night.
Clearly, But how long does this stuff stay in your system? I know a friend who does like a very high risk job where they test him every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, and they will suddenly do a random drug test. And he's always really, really careful because you don't know how long this stuff lasts. Apparently, they can check in your hair. And they can find stuff from 3 months, maybe even more. I'm not sure. Maybe the comments section will know. But up to months and months and months after, they can test you and they can find all kinds of stuff in your system. So he had Molly and Coke and a whole bunch of other stuff in there as well.
Yeah, no,
Justin
he had
Timberlake's
a wild
been
light.
Busy.
Look at that.
There's the mugshot.
Yeah.
Doesn't look too bad.
He doesn't. But his eyes are telling quite the story.
Well, I'm sure he's not thrilled.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I see. No one is above the law.
Yeah. Someone says his dances are a 4 out of 10. He was probably driving from Britney Spears' house, says Chill Brew ZA. I love it. It's his drug cocktail to prevent his balls from dropping so he can keep hitting those high notes, says Naked Goose. So you know. Dacha stays in your blood and piss for 30 days and your hair for over 3 months.
Yes, I know this for a fact.
You do?
Yes.
So what, did you have a test done and they found it 3 months later?
Well, I had the threat of having a test done once upon a time.
So you had to figure out how long
so
it would last.
I had to figure it out. A friend of mine told me, look, drink vinegar. You'll be fine. I was like, no, I'm not doing that.
It won't get rid of it.
It won't.
Really won't. Once it's in your system, it's in your system, right? And they can find it.
And when they do, you know what I mean?
Yeah, look,
I'm not operating heavy machinery or anything like that. It is what it is. And I'm one of those people who advocates for recreational use of the good stuff, the marijuana.
How long does alcohol stay in your system? No, serious question. Like what, 24 hours, 48 hours?
Something like that.
I would
imagine not any longer than 36 hours in my mind.
So if weed is in your hair for 3 months, which drug stays in your system the longest? Like which one can you still pick up years later if there is such a thing?
I wonder.
I wonder too. I think that would be interesting to know. Just as a... You know, one of those general knowledge questions that comes up in a quiz.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for the I mean, looking to take, I'd like to take the drug that'll be in my system for the longest, please. I've got a couple of people I'd like to impress in 2038. Could I? Could I please have some of that? I bought a fake pee kit in Alaska for my cruise ship job to pass the test, says Bitcoin Boot. But I'm sure you can also get, like, I know that the athletes who they test.
Yeah.
They have ways of passing the tests.
They do.
Then I'm not.
I've heard rumors of them using fake penises and adding a little bag on
fake
the side.
Penises. Yeah, yeah. That's what I've heard too. I've heard that you can get like a kit that will give fake urine. Because they're not, I mean, I don't know who they take these things to. Obviously, they take them to trained chemists who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably a way to. There's always a way.
There is.
I think especially in South Africa, you could probably go on Temu now and buy like a urine test pass or something. Could. I'm sure you could find this stuff, right?
Definitely.
Congo Chris says the ethanol is broken down very quickly. Methanol stays for 24 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am not surprised by that. I'd actually want to find out how long heroin stays in your body. Like, you know, all of those hard drugs, like so cocaine, heroin.
That's a good point too. Chill Brew says, I'm bald, so I'm fine on the 3-month hair test.
Ooh.
That's interesting. So would they be able to check from like a hair on your arm maybe?
Perhaps.
Maybe they would.
I mean, it is all made up of the same stuff, so why wouldn't it be there?
Nyaupe never leaves your system, even if you become mayor, says Carl DeSantis. Yes, the Nyaupe mayor of Johannesburg is still very much in the picture.
Like, you know, this. Whenever I see someone high on Nyaupe...
You think of the mayor?
No.
Oh, I do.
I always wonder to myself, like, why would you even start doing that thing? Like,
where do you see these people who are high on Nyaupe?
When you're traveling in and around the CBD, you'll see them all the time. They are so distinct. It's easy to spot them. They are half asleep, but they're standing up. And when they speak, it's like, they speak so slow, it's almost like they're speaking in reverse.
Do you know what the chemicals are in there? I wouldn't know. I just know it as Nyaupe. I don't know anything about it, right?
Yeah, apparently they throw a bunch of different things in there. It's like the chemical residue of how they make heroin or some shit like that.
Oh,
and then
shit.
They add a bit of red poison or something.
Wow.
I've heard a bunch of rumors about
that.
That's
horrific.
It is absolutely horrific. But it is hilarious watching these high, Nyaupe people when they're high. It's hilarious. I'm serious.
All right, so from that ridiculous conversation, because I think, Jack is not concerned, but if you are a person who's taken some hardcore drugs lately, maybe you're concerned, to restorative justice. Now, why did you want to talk about restorative justice?
Are you
suddenly getting involved in the penal system?
Do you know what? Like, I was actually thinking to myself how, what's his name? Gayton McKenzie is now soon to be, a member of parliament and all of that good stuff. And
Jacob Zuma is the leader of a party, even though he was put in jail for a little bit.
Yeah.
Decided he wasn't put in long enough,
so,
blah, blah, blah.
You know, when people came after him for somewhat pointing out the fact that we shouldn't be cancelling Reinaldo Hulls, he was pointing out that he went through the whole process of restorative justice and he's a better man for it. Now, I don't know how effective that has been with other people, because the recidivism rate in this country is absolutely shocking. So it made me question, is restorative justice for a select number of people in this country, or is it applied uniformly across the country? Because if it is, then we'd have a lot more Gayton McKenzies than these other criminals who just keep going in and out of jail.
Okay, so you're right about a couple of things there. I know that our offenders reoffending, recidivism is a big problem in this country, because we don't really improve people in jail. What we do is we make them better criminals because they meet other criminals and they figure out ways to buck the system.
Yeah.
And really our jails are nowhere near a place where you can get better. You know,
no.
It's not like people are studying degrees in jail. There are probably one or two.
Sure.
But most people in our jails in South Africa just become worse and worse and worse. The conditions inside South African jails are intolerable. It's not the kind of place you rehabilitate people in.
That is
so
it. Meanwhile, we get videos of prisoners having sex with their the prison warder and all of this stuff. Like, I'm trying not to snitch.
No,
I'm not going to snitch in a bit.
It happens.
The truth of the matter is, like, I've got a couple of people that were that grew up in my neighborhood that are behind bars, and we chat on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they're on Facebook?
Yeah.
So if you've got social media in jail, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a terrible thing. Like, you were put in that prison for a reason. You clearly could not behave according to societal norms, and you were put there for a particular reason. You shouldn't be indulging in cell phones and all of this other stuff. It just doesn't make sense. It seems as if South African prisons breed more criminals.
Yeah, they do. So, in other words, if you go to prison in South Africa, that's tickets. You're not going to get better.
No.
You're not going to come out and be a better citizen, and suddenly you'll be planting vegetables for the neighborhood and teaching the kids in the neighborhood why it's bad to do crime. If anything, you're going to come out of there a worse gangster. You're going to be much more powerful. You're going to be more respected by the other criminals.
Yep.
And therefore, you'd be tempted to do more crime. I know that the theory is you should go into jail. There should be rehab programs. You should learn to, I don't know, do crafts, learn some skills, maybe up your education levels. It doesn't happen.
It doesn't.
So what we've got to do is separate the idea of restorative justice, which is this idea that we can improve people in jail, from the fact that we as society should forgive people once they've served their time. I'm a big fan of once people have done their time, then you let them re-enter society. Hopefully they come into society and they go, look, I don't want to go back to jail, so I'm going to try and behave myself. But we don't really give them the tools to do that. I don't think it matters, though, because once someone has done, if let's say you are sentenced for murder and you go to jail for 10 years, okay? After your 10 years, you come out, you should be able to carry on with your life. Whether or not there's been rehabilitation, whether or not our prison system works, you've served 10 years of time. That's all that we put you in for. There's no requirement on society to have to keep hating you because you murdered someone 10 years ago. You've done the time. So now you should be able to come out and carry on with your life.
The question is, if you're a first-time offender, I agree with you. Sure. It could be chalked up to you making a horrible mistake, making the worst possible decision you could have in that moment. Mm-hmm. You go to jail and you come out. The unfortunate thing is, more often than not, you go back, especially in this country. Now, you serve your next 5 years for the next crime.
Yeah.
Should we let you come out and just forgive you the same way we did the first time around?
I'd like to separate what actually happens practically from the attitude we should have to criminals.
Okay.
And not just criminals, but in general. You know, if people behave themselves once they've done something bad, and a couple of months, weeks, years, depending on how severe the crime is, have passed, you should be able to give them a chance to re-enter society and carry on as
Definitely.
Normal. You can't hold a grudge for life.
Yeah, you can't.
Okay.
And it weighs you down.
Just practical. It's like you can't keep hating someone. You can't keep loathing and detesting them and outside of the society, keeping them away from everybody else. You can't keep that going forever.
You can't.
There's no crime that bad. People deserve to be forgiven after a certain amount of time.
I get that, definitely. I'm just saying we must keep it all relative. There's some people that need to show a bit of remorse.
No, that's
all of
important.
That stuff.
Yeah, sure. That's important.
We need to keep all of these things in consideration, is all I'm saying. I'm hoping that at some point there will be some sort of reform that comes about where we actually have people that were behind bars rejoining society in a meaningful way, not just...
Why are you worried about this? Have you just suddenly found yourself in trouble that you might be going off to jail sometime soon?
No, I'm just... I'm in a position whereby I feel like the moment people, at least on some level, fear being put behind bars.
Of course, you should fear.
The crime rate will drop
in
this country.
I'll tell you, we did a show... I've spoken about this before, so I don't want to bore people with the details.
Oh, yeah.
We did a show from CMAX in Pretoria, Khosi Mampuru Prison.
Yeah.
back before it was Khosi Mampuru, in the we saw like the individual cells for the really bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
We saw the awaiting trial prison, which was actually in some ways the worst. But I'll tell you, whatever you think, we don't take crime seriously enough in this country. The criminal justice system doesn't work. All that's true. What I will say is if you've actually seen the inside of a South African prison, you will do everything in your yep. power not to end up there.
Yep.
Man, just behave yourself. It is not. That yep. is a very bad place.
It is terrible.
And I'm not one of those people who thinks you should like take your child when they're 12 years old and show them what could happen.
Scared straight.
But maybe when you, yeah, exactly. Maybe when you're in your 20s, you should just accompany a lawyer who's going to consult with a client at the prison. Just yep. accompany them, just to see what's happening inside those jails.
Mm-hmm.
South African jails are horrific.
They are exactly
and
that.
Not nice. You don't want to end up there.
Do not
trust me.
Yes, do not fuck around. Do not fuck around.
So, you know, paradoxically, there is an enormous amount of, let's just say, there is a lot of, there are a lot of good reasons why you should avoid getting into trouble with yep. the law.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't require us executing people on Church Square in Pretoria on Fridays
no,
at 12.
Don't.
You know,
no, we don't.
Just take a look at how prisoners live. Mm. All right, let's get Roman in here. I want to talk to him about his trip to Russia. He took a very interesting little sojourn right into the heart of darkness because we're told by all the countries that control intake of media on a day-to-day basis, we're not allowed to get RT, we're not allowed to get certain news outlets because they're Russian controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And all we've heard about from America for years is Russian disinformation. They've got these farms of bots and things. So you don't know what to believe about Russia. And unless you've been there recently, and I actually know a couple, a guy and a girl who went there recently on a holiday, and they said it was amazing. They said they absolutely loved it. And then I heard Roman had gone, and I thought, I'd talk to him about his trip there. And he's not one to hold back, so I believe he's going to tell us some interesting things and give us some insights that nobody else would give us. Roman Kabanak, it's nice to see you. How are you, dude?
Morning.
Yeah.
Gareth, how are you doing?
Jack? I'm good.
How's it, man?
You good?
Yeah,
good.
Jack and I are
excellent.
Excited to talk to you. How was Russia?
Fantastic, as they say. So let me give you the context,
No, who
though.
Says? Who says? Because we're told it's the most terrible place on earth.
Yeah.
Run
everyone,
by dictators and it's nobody has any rights and it's the most
it
evil
works.
Place.
That's why it works. So, to give you the context. So Rosatom builds nuclear reactors. It's
okay.
like one of the biggest nuclear reactors and power station builders in the entire world.
That's we were going to work with them, weren't we? Under
we
the
were,
Zuma
mm.
regime.
Until the Americans scuppered that to make us less competitive. But anyway, so I know the local CEO of Rosatom of Africa.
Oh, so, okay.
And he says, I'm part of the press. Come do a press tour of a nuclear reactor in a place called Pivek. Have you heard of Pivek?
Never.
No.
No. It's the northernmost city in the world. It's on the
really?
Arctic
Must
Circle.
Must have been very unpleasant.
Very. Mm. It's terrible. Mm. It's really awful.
Yeah.
It's really awful.
Okay. Isn't this where they used to have the gulags?
There is. There was a gulag next door. And Pivek was built on labor camps. And the building that you see there are basically the dwellings where these people used to live.
Yeah.
It's like two a room. The hotel we stayed in was a former labor camp dwelling.
So it must have been beautiful.
As you can imagine.
Stunning.
So far you're doing a great job of like, Russian tourism is fantastic. Stay in old gulag.
But what's interesting about Pivek, it's a town of 5,000 people, so it's like just a slightly bigger Oranje, which is already insignificant, right?
Right.
Tiny. It's powered by a floating nuclear reactor.
Mm-hmm.
Which produces, 70 megawatts of power. So it's one unit of Kusile, for example.
Mm.
And they are testing this thing where they tow reactors into place across that northern Arctic Sea to create a trade route that bypasses the Suez Canal.
Very clever.
So this is the first element of it. So you've got these towns of 5,000 people that's powered by nuclear energy.
Listen, you don't have to convince me. And I know that they paid for your trip, so I'm glad that you've acknowledged that up front, because otherwise people are going to say, oh, well, why is he shilling for Russia,
yeah.
right? Because that's what people are like.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of nuclear. I think nuclear energy is the only way for serious countries to go about providing power for their people.
Mm.
and for industry and for commerce and for everything else that we need to do. And the fact that we don't use this because a couple of people got spooked by three major events in history, all of which have become these terrifying omens of what could go wrong in nuclear. We don't talk about all the terrible things that go on with all the other power that we try to provide people. I mean, the number of birds that are killed by these huge big windmills that they put up.
Yeah.
It's seriously like thousands and thousands of birds. It's an absolute eyesore. But we talk about Three Mile Island, we talk about Fukushima, and we talk about Chernobyl. And then people go, oh, well, we can't have nuclear power, which is absolute nonsense. There are nuclear power stations that have been running absolutely perfectly. They're maintained very well, and they've been providing power to the people of places like France for hundreds of years. Well, not quite hundreds, but at least decades.
Half a century.
At least decades.
And I mean, from a purely statistical standpoint, there are more that work than those that don't. You've got fewer Chernobyls than, you know what I mean? Like just
and
from
they provide,
just averages.
And they provide so much more power for what they are than any other kind of power.
Yeah.
But this is where you figure out how much of a scam the climate change people are.
Yes.
Right? I mean, if you want clean energy without any emissions, nuclear is the obvious choice.
Absolutely.
It is obviously the obvious choice. You build it once, it stays in operation for 50, 60 years, then you build it again. Mm-hmm. Solar panels, you have to make them. You have to dig the minerals out of the ground, make them in China, ship them across the world to South Africa so we, you know, don't have load shedding in our homes. Mm. And it only works during the day. Like, you call this sustainable
and
energy.
And you have to replace them every, 15 years or less.
And they don't degrade.
Yeah, correct.
You put them somewhere in a thing. Mm. But
okay, so nuclear, let's put that aside now. But this place does sound fascinating. What Privec?
Yeah, so it's what's interesting about it is that it used to have about 14,000 people in the 80s. There's a mine, there's a bit of trade. It's 1,000 kilometers from Alaska, so it's the closest point to Alaska. So maybe Sarah Palin sees
only far north, you were also far east.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, how long? Because Russia is an enormous place. And when you look at maps of it, it's hard to conceive of just how great the distance between a place like Moscow and somewhere like this Privec is.
So the flight to Privec from Moscow is, in total, 15 hours.
That's as far as from, you know, Johannesburg to London.
Hmm.
So you fly 4 hours to a place called Novosibirsk, which is a rather big city in the middle.
Your Russian didn't improve.
No, not in the slightest. So that's about 4 hours. You stay in that city for about 3 hours, and then it's 6 hours to Privec.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, once you reach Privec, it's literally, the video's almost finished. I filmed everything. It's almost edited. It'll be out this weekend. But you will see, like, the airport is like a solid concrete block.
Hideous. And totalitarian architecture.
There's a tank from 1932, like, just lying in the parking lot. And all sorts of things. It's fantastic. Like, it's really interesting. But the town itself now has 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Because in the 90s, everything collapsed.
Yeah.
The Soviet Union collapsed. Industry collapsed.
Boris Yeltsin's liver collapsed.
Boris Yeltsin's liver collapsed. But since then, the Russian government are paying people, like civil servants, like teachers and doctors, about 3 to 4 times more to go live in these far-flung areas.
Right.
Because they want to create that northern trade route. So we visited, I mean, it's not a North Korean tour, but it was a guided tour.
Sure.
We weren't really allowed to sort of walk by ourselves because it's a nuclear reactor.
Well, I don't
think
anyone should walk around a nuclear reactor on their own.
Yes.
Even in the most free country in the world. But yes. Okay.
All right. So they showed us Privec. They showed us there's a school, right? And the school is focusing on gender studies. No. They're focusing on maths, physics, computer science.
Yeah.
And Rosatom pays a lot of money to these places where they got their reactors because they want to create the next batch of nuclear engineers. Not because they're struggling to fill posts, but because they think nuclear is going to be the dominant power source within the next century.
Mm. Yes, even if climate change-obsessed Western nations think not for now, there'll be a point where they need the power, as we've discovered in places like Britain, where they were importing Russian power, Germany, they were importing Russian power up to a little while ago. And then, of course, the war broke out. Then they didn't have their Russian power. And they had to recommission all their old coal-fired power stations. Yeah,
not the nuclear reactors, funny enough, right?
Well, they'll figure that out in the long run. So, unfortunately, once all these performative leaders that the Western democracies have elected are out.
But it's only the Westerners who don't like nuclear power. So Egypt is building one.
Yep.
I think Qatar or Abu Dhabi is building one.
Mm-hmm.
Ghana bought one recently. Uzbekistan bought six while we were there.
All right.
Wow. Kyrgyzstan also wants one. So Rosatom is trying to really get that market because it's them, it's the French, EDF, and it's the South Koreans who are excellent at building these nuclear reactors. But Rosatom's the oldest one.
Okay.
Because the Soviets were the first people to take this technology for war that Oppenheimer created and made it civil, i.e. to create power.
All right. And so, yeah, go ahead.
To my understanding, that company, like, they don't just help you build the thing, but they help you maintain. You have access to all of the engineers from any given point in time.
It's like the Zuma deal, right? So Zuma's deal was build, operate, maintain.
Yeah.
So the Russians, the Rosatom would build it, would operate it and maintain it. We don't have to do anything.
The part that you're leaving out is that he would be able to skim some off the top.
It was 500 billion rand. How much is the IPPs? 1.2 trillion?
Yeah, of course.
And even then, if you look at corruption in nuclear compared to any other energy source, it's basically non-existent.
All right, so that was a good explanation, and some would say like an ad for Rosatom. But let's just talk a little bit about Russia.
Yes.
Because I am fascinated with the place. I do think it's one of the most intriguing parts of the world, particularly at the moment, because they're increasingly isolated from the West, either by their own doing, and we can talk about Russia-Ukraine, we can talk about whether that war even feels like it's happening in places like Moscow. But I think that most people would be interested in your experience of the place as a country, somewhere where people go about their day-to-day lives, what it looks like, what it feels like. Quite famously, Tucker Carlson was there recently, and people were furious that he'd even gone. People were angry that he had, they were even more angry that he had nice things to say.
Mm.
So tell us about your overall impression of the place. And it's your first trip to Russia, so you've never been there before.
No, I've never been there before. What's interesting is when you go to the airport through immigration. So you arrive after quite a long flight. You have to go to Dubai, stay there for five hours and go to Moscow. And then the border guard, who chances are can be a very attractive lady.
Right.
Very dour. Like very...
Yeah, sad looking.
No, not sad, like stern. Oh. Like Helen Zeller telling Fikini you can't read. It's stern, right? Last, I don't know if you saw that last night. It was very good. So they take your passport and they hold it up and then they just stare at you.
Oh.
But like in your eyes.
Mm.
It feels like 10 minutes, but it's probably 30 seconds. But they just stare. And you don't know what to do.
You're like, shit, I'm going to the gulag.
Yeah. And then they speak Russian, so you don't understand. Mm. They don't try to make you very comfortable at immigration. But once you get through that, it's part of the process. Everyone sort of agrees that's part of the process. But once you get in to Moscow, so we stayed very close to the center,
mm-hmm.
close to the theaters, the Kremlin, the Red Square, the Metropole Hotel.
You do some
Hotel.
Touristy stuff?
We didn't have too much time. So we arrived at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. At 6 p.m., I met colleagues of mine who are Russian,
mm-hmm.
who live there, and they took me out that night. And when you go to the Red Square in the Kremlin and everything is lit up, it's a bit like Paris. Huge boulevards, not a scrap of paper, not
clean,
not graffiti,
tidy,
mm-hmm.
Lights everywhere, music. Like old school Soviet music or church music in these public speakers on these boulevards. It feels like you're a bit in a video game half the time.
All right.
And I know I went to like the best part of Russia. But when you go to Cape Town, you don't go to tourism in Langa or
Kalinichi. Yeah.
So people say, oh, you don't know the real Russia. I don't want to know the real Russia. I got to know the center of Moscow where I was based.
Yeah,
right.
For 12 hours.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You walk freely. There was no police officers, army officials, nothing like that. No roadblocks. People walking around, lots of smokers. The older generation are sort of conservative, a bit like Afrikaners, like a bit shy, mm-hmm. one could say. But the youngsters are all like dancing on TikTok and doing shit, whatever they're
right,
doing.
Okay.
You know, basically,
I mean,
the same shit that's happening everywhere else.
If it wasn't for the language, you would think you're in the middle of a Western European city.
Yeah.
Just cleaner and less smell of urine.
Christian says, in 2023, 8.5 million foreign tourists visited Russia, which is a 3.5% increase from 2022. Today, if you visit the center of Paris, it's like you're in Africa, says Bitcoin Boot.
That's
probably true too. Okay, so they're a different kind of personality, I mean, by and large. And we've got this idea that Russians don't have a sense of humor. Everything's super serious and stern, as you said earlier. But was that your impression of Russian people? Are they taking strain with all the war going on?
No, so the language barrier was a problem. We only could speak to the people who were with us, who were very fluent. One of our guides lived in Australia for 9 years, a young lady who of 27. Mm-hmm. She had a bit of an Australian twang, speaking English. And she came back to Russia in 2021 because she says it's a better place to have a family than Australia.
Wow.
For example, because she said Australia is very expensive, two people need to work to maintain the household and your child goes to nursery school. And in Russia, it's sort of different. Russia's much poorer. I mean, the average salary there is, according to friends I know, across the country, it's about 27,000 rubles. Divide that by six, then you get the rand value. Mm.
That's the average salary. So they're closer to us than they are to Australia. In terms
very much so. In Moscow, if you want a nice two-bed apartment, it's 20,000 rand a month, which is Sandton, Pretoria prices, which, it's expensive for someone like us.
Okay.
But the meals, we had a six-course meal with my friends on the first day. I mean, the best, fish in Moscow and whatever. It was 11,000 rubles for three of us. So it's about 2,000 rand, which is the price of a good meal
in
South Africa.
If you went out roughly, in Joburg. Yeah.
So I found the prices quite competitive, but I think we need to understand that if you look at the Russian GDP per capita, it only started increasing in 2000 when, someone became president. Before then, it was a total collapse of the Russian society in the 90s.
Because this is where people get confused and they say, well, we don't understand why the Russians like Putin. Well, this is why.
Because he got economic growth, it's safe, the oligarchs are being put under control, and, places of all, Moscow, where I was very, very clean. You can see a lot of money spent to make the place clean, habitable, smell nice, look lovely, et cetera, et cetera. What is interesting, though, the architecture in Moscow, a lot of it was built by Stalin, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, you were raving about this. I'm curious, because when you think of Stalin and you think of communist architecture, it's hideous, like concrete, just really, really
just cement
bad.
Blocks everywhere.
I mean, I've seen East Berlin. I haven't been to Russia, but East Berlin is one of the most depressing places I've ever been in my life. It's miserable. There isn't one pretty building. And of course, the 70s are probably more responsible than Russia or than communism or than just completely non-creative architects. But what was pretty that Stalin built?
Well, everything he built in Moscow, at
in
least,
Moscow,
was pretty.
Right.
So, I mean,
it wasn't totally utilitarian.
On the outskirts, on the way to the airport, you see the utilitarian sort of brutalism, right? Mm. But in the center, you don't. So what he did, he built seven buildings. They're known as Stalin buildings, and they are the sort of the prime residential real estates in Moscow. Okay. And it's these beautiful, I'll show you photos, or it'll be on the video when it comes out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it's just a stunning piece of architecture from the 1930s, a bit modern, a little bit art deco, a little bit traditional, but it's a stunning piece of architecture. And it's all around Moscow. And all those big boulevards were also built by him as well. Ostensibly, because he had a bit of a Nazi thing. He wanted his legacy to live on for 1,000 years. Mm. So he built all these buildings out of real material.
Plus, they needed a lot of space for those tanks for the May Day celebration.
Yeah, and well, they do. But these buildings are fantastic. Yeah. And it's going in, you never think the Bolsheviks built anything beautiful, but they did.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, if they did this, I'm not a Bolshevik, don't get me wrong, but if they did this, and I was misguided on this, what else did they do that wasn't just plain evil?
Well, this is the kind of stuff that you only learn when you go to a place.
Yes.
Do they have any opinions about South Africans? Really, Richard says, I wonder what the Russian citizens feel towards South Africans. Did they even know anything about us?
None whatsoever.
None.
So there were 12 of us on the tour, the three South Africans. Mm-hmm. Indonesians were there, Indians, someone from Kyrgyzstan, someone from Uzbekistan, and there were other chaps as well that I can't. Oh, from Ghana. Mm-hmm. But no, not really. So the Ghanaian guy was called Emmanuel. He's a sort of radio journalist. And a lot of Russian women came up and asked for a selfie. And I kissed him.
Because they don't see a lot of black people.
Yeah, but he was like a big guy, a big, big black guy.
Yeah.
Soft, you know, soft-hearted. So they do a double take if they see like a black person, but it's not. It's like if you go to South Korea as a white person, you know, they just look at you. But
they look at you funny.
Yeah. What was the most surprising thing that you came across during your trip?
The most surprising thing was that you got let's be honest, a shithole town of 5,000 people powered by a nuclear reactor.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially within the Arctic Circle. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I mean, come on. Imagine a small village in the Eastern Cape and there's a nuclear reactor nearby. And it's only at 25% capacity. So you can increase the capacity of the town by 75% and you still have enough energy.
It's phenomenal. It's just
amazing. That is pretty amazing.
Carl says, what does Roman actually do for a living? I'm genuinely interested. Surely the morning shot isn't enough.
So, very important. I make no money from morning shot whatsoever.
Okay.
YouTube pays like maybe 10 grand a month, but like we just put that away and don't use it. So I got two other businesses that make me money. So I used to be a lawyer, no longer. I got two other businesses. One is outsourcing, where I get local talent for international companies.
Right.
And I do some digital marketing stuff, consulting.
Excellent. All right. Well, you know, you're just clearing up all of these things here.
Yeah.
Then I see Robin says that she went to Russia in 2019 and was absolutely incredible. Best was flying on Aeroflot. Instead of the standard plastic cutlery, we got stainless steel knives and forks. Guess no one fucks with Russian pilots.
That is actually true. So we took seven airlines or Spirit Airlines. It feels like Safair. The problem is the further east you go in Russia, the bigger the people become. So you got the Chechens and you got the like Kazakhs and these big bastards, right? Like the big Afrikaners type.
Yeah.
And you're sitting in like a seat like this. So I was
surrounded
both times. I was in the middle. And it's 6 hours. And
oh,
it's
that's
4 hours.
Horrific.
And then they sleep. So you can't actually move them. So if you need to go anywhere or do anything, you can't see. You have to sit there and
horrific.
But the Russians are very much like Afrikaners. I don't know why Afrikaners got upset when I said this.
they're
quiet, they're sort of a bit stoic, but once you get to know them, they open up and become jovial and fun. It didn't feel alien, like an alien culture at all.
So Hugh Direction wants to know, what did Roman have to eat out there? Potatoes and vodka.
So I don't drink, as people know.
I mean, Russians famously are big drinkers.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see it. In Pivik, no one is outside.
Yeah, it's too cold.
Mm. It's too cold. There's no one outside, so I'm sure they drink.
And by the way, you're not there at a bad time of year. You were there, what, a couple of
weeks
ago?
I was there in the middle of the beginning of summer, so it was only minus two.
It was only minus two.
It went to minus 40.
Sure. Did you take warm enough clothes?
Would you take this and a jacket? It's only minus two, guys. It's not that cold. To eat, Russians are very big on fish. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're surrounded by oceans. So they're very big on fish and very big on sort of like yak meat.
Yak meat?
Yeah.
Which
is fantastic. I had yak cheeks at the Atom Expo over there. It was delicious.
Very nice.
But broth is the main thing, like borscht. Yeah. So it's a broth with pork and vegetables, and that's very nice. It suits their country very well. We ate very well. In Pivek, unfortunately, they get a flight in once a week with fresh produce. So if you go to the shops, a kilogram of tomatoes is about 300 rand.
Jesus.
Because there's nothing growing there. They have to import absolutely everything.
Yeah.
The only cheap things were cigarettes, but everything else is like 10, 15 times the price of anywhere else.
I imagine they still smoke cigarettes indoors, especially given the weather.
So there were no smoking signs, but it's not policed as such. I didn't see them being policed. Life feels a lot freer in Moscow than in many Western European countries that I've been to.
I find this fascinating. I also hear all kinds of stories about Russia being a place where, you know, you can go on these like weekends there and you can go bear hunting and you can shoot tank rounds through, you know, you could basically get rocket launchers. You can hire them, shoot shit. Yeah. Is there stuff like that going on?
I mean, I assume
you didn't
so.
Do it.
I didn't do it. I wish I did, but I do assume that is the case. Yes.
I mean, that would be a hell of a bachelor's party, right?
Yeah.
Get together 10 of your mates and go and drive a tank. I think that would be fun.
That would be hilarious.
But I spoke to the clerk of the hotel that we're staying in before we left, a 21-year-old young guy in Moscow, just before we left. And I said, you know,
21-year-old guy, he's not in the army, he's not fighting on the border.
No, he was studying English. He wanted to be a sort of a translator for something.
Okay.
And I said, you know, there's this perception in the West that, like, there's a lot of censorship in Russia, and you think that is the case. And this is not part of the tour guide. This is not someone, this is just a clerk of the hotel. And he says, a lot of it is overblown in terms of a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, if you go on Twitter and you criticize what the government is doing, you can do it. You can't really criticize the war. Just the same as you can't criticize the war in Ukraine. It does make sense to censor, like, you need patriotism, you need people together. You can't sow discord. I sort of understand that. And there's a lot of... The interesting thing is, from what I understand, they actually trust what the government says. Because when the government says something, they tend to do it. And I said it's the opposite at home.
Yeah. So they're not doing what governments that we're used to.
Yeah.
And I mean, America's front and center when it comes to, like, bullshitting people. You just have to watch a White House press conference and you know they're lying to you. You can just tell that they're saying, look over here while we do this over here. And you can tell that, I mean, just this week, they, Karine Jean-Pierre, I think her name is, the White House press secretary, said,
the worst one.
The people are putting out fake videos of Biden stumbling and fumbling and being old. And I'm like, what's fake? The stuff you're putting out is really embarrassing. It's not fake. It's like they lie to us to our faces. They're not doing that in Russia.
You would think they'd get better at lying given how much they lie. It's actually pretty ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
So it's not about being believable. It's just about destroying your spirit. That's why they lie to you, to your face. So, so what this guy was saying was that since 2000, Russia has been on a sort of upwards trajectory in terms of GDP, in terms of material wealth, in terms of living conditions. And during that period of time, Putin's government and Medvedev's government as well, they say we're going to do X, Y, Z, and they tended to do it. There was no reason to doubt them because you could see the consequences in a year or two from when they said it.
Yeah.
So when I said, we don't trust our government in South Africa at all because they just lie, like, they couldn't understand why a government would lie to you. Why would they do that? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, if you want to have the support of the people, lying to them is the worst thing you can do. Like, they didn't really get it. He says the one
frankly,
thing...
Frankly, I don't get it either.
Also don't get it.
Yeah.
But the one thing he says is that there's been a bit of a fractious relationship now because the government promised no conscription.
Mm.
But they went back and had some sort of partial conscription.
Okay.
And so the people are like, this is... like a lie, and we don't like it too much. Not to the degree where they're going to, like, overthrow or whatever the case
might
be. And
are they all talking about the war?
Fairly openly. So we weren't told what to say or what to do. I just thought it was impolite to bring it up most of the times. They do talk about the sanctions. Mm-hmm. Like, they used to travel to New York for conferences and things like that. So now they travel to Shanghai. And it's so wonderful to see other parts of the world.
Yeah, sure.
In the West. And you can see quite a few shops. There's a big shopping center called, I think it's called Guma, opposite the Red Square. I think it's called Gum or Guma. It's like the Harrods of Moscow. And all the Burberry, Chanel, everything's like closed. So you walk in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can't buy that stuff anymore.
No, it's all closed.
Huh. You'd think they'd have Fong Kong, but you probably just didn't go to the right places.
So what a lot of companies did was they sold their Russian interest to Russian entrepreneurs, and they just sort of Fong Konged it. So Starbucks coffee is now Star's coffee. So instead of having the full mermaid, you just have her head as the logo. But it's the same recipe, same suppliers, but the suppliers have moved to Russia now. So ironically, you had this sort of local industrialization thanks to sanctions, which has saved the economy to a large degree. I don't know how long it will last, but there's been a lot more jobs created because they're not delegating to the third world, or the supply chain is now all internal into Russia.
Do Russian people even care how they are viewed? Like, earlier on you were talking about how they view us, but do they care that some of these narratives are being spun around the world?
So these people are Westerners, right? They are Western people. And I think there's a sort of, I didn't get it, but I spoke to people who go there often, who I know very well. And there's a sense of sadness that they are treated like they're not Westerners. Like they sort of notably more savage than Westerners.
Yeah.
Thanks to the sort of special military operation in the Ukraine. But there's a sadness whereby for a long time they wanted to be part of the West for a very long time. They wanted to be part of NATO. They wanted to be part of
Since the 1700s, but yeah.
Yeah, and they've never been accepted through hook, crook, or whatever the case might be. So I think there's a bit of a sadness to it. But they're starting to realign themselves more to the Chinese, to the North Koreans, to sort of everyone who's not West.
Yeah.
So that's the alignment that has
to
be done.
It's almost like the West has chased them into the arms of others.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Putin is in North Korea. Any concerns there for either one of you? Like they rolled out the red carpet for him and all of that good stuff. Should that be a cause for concern?
It's the only red carpet they have. Yeah. They don't have a lot of red carpets. They don't have a lot of visitors, frankly.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised. But yeah, of course he'd be chasing good relations with them. He needs to find friends where he can.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, everyone else seems to be dead against him. We're obviously not here in South Africa. We're big fans of his. Our government is, right?
Yeah.
You didn't have any problems with visas or anything?
There's no visas required for South Africans.
Okay.
So it's one of the few countries in the world where you can sort of travel freely. No, you just go.
Okay.
And it's super simple.
Just hop on a plane and you're there.
Yeah.
The women attractive?
Yes.
The ones you saw?
No, amazingly attractive.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Richard says, does the teasers in Russia only have South African strippers, like an exchange program?
But I spoke to a lady there who was showing us around on the last day, and I said, how are sort of Russian women? And they said they're very headstrong and very stubborn, and it's not a good idea to have a Russian as your first girlfriend, because they will, like, screw you.
They'll ruin you.
They will ruin you. They're quite headstrong, because, I mean, the Bolsheviks were quite adamant on this, like, gender equality stuff.
Yeah.
In theory, right? In practice, right. It was very different.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since, well, she says, since 2000, women emancipation has been much more accelerated.
Yeah.
Thanks to economic growth, thanks to more jobs being open, et cetera, et cetera. So in school, they were taught to be equal. So there wasn't, the Bolsheviks were a patriarchy, like,
sure,
overtly. But in theory, at least, it was meant to be. So the women are quite strong there, and they don't take shit, apparently.
Carl wants to know, and I think this is something a lot of people, you don't know the answer, but what do you think? MK paid for by the Russians? How involved are they in American politics? How involved do you think they are in South African politics?
So the person who said MK is funded by the Russians is a guy called Andre Pienaar. He's a South African guy. He wants to build a nuclear reactor in the Western Cape.
Okay.
Not a Russian nuclear reactor. He is part of the Atlantic Council, which is basically CIA hush money to spread democracy around the world.
So he doesn't like Russia.
Well, of course not. So I don't really trust that. The only thing I would say is MK's social media game is very good.
Yeah.
And you know, Jacob, God bless him.
They're not.
He doesn't. I mean, they're not. Yeah. Yes, yes. So I think there is someone professional there, just in terms of social media game, but the rest is just a shambles.
So you don't think that the Russians are actively funding MK?
No. And when we spoke to the Russian press attaché the week after the invasion, well, the special military operation in Ukraine, and I asked him at the time, how important is South Africa to Russia? And his response was, as important as our percentage of trade. They are 3% of our trade.
Okay.
So they're really, we are important.
But not that important.
But not that important, let's be honest.
So we've got to remember where we fit in. Okay.
At some stage, we were told that the S in BRICS should have been lowercase. And you know what I mean? It kind of plays into that. Makes sense?
I think the only reason we are in BRICS is because of the South Atlantic corridor, which could be very useful.
Yeah.
I mean, and that we have, let's be honest, we have a lot of natural resources that could be exploited, but we are surrounded by idiots who don't exploit them.
Okay, you're not thinking of moving to Russia, though. It was fun, it was interesting, but you don't think it's that great.
Well, I've only done, when you look at the size.
I mean, you've done more than us.
0.1%.
Yeah, sure.
I would love to go back. I'd love to go to St. Petersburg. There's lots of rural areas that are beautiful to look at as well. But if it's, how can I explain? I'd rather move there than Paris.
Okay.
Or
and you London, are French, so
or,
that's interesting.
Or London is done. A lot of French people moved there in the past 20 years.
Mm.
Lower taxes, 10% flat rate taxes.
That's a good, that's now, something I didn't know.
Apparently they're increasing it because they need more money, but I mean, from 10% you go to 12%, still
a
much better than here.
Much better than
deal.
Here. Yep.
Okay. So you're going to the inauguration today?
No.
No?
No, no.
You going, Jack?
Invited.
Hell no.
Oh. I thought I was here among people who are important.
No, man.
I've you guys not going to the inauguration. I'm very disappointed.
Have you been invited?
No, that'd be ridiculous. Invite me. What do you invite me for? No, but I did hear them practicing. There were helicopters and the presidential plane and jets and all kinds of things flying over my house all day yesterday. So they're getting ready for a big day. It's already started, according to Christian.
Well, getting here, I saw numerous blue light brigades going all over the place. That's
are
why
they?
I was a little bit late.
Gareth, we need to make that suggestion you made a couple of weeks ago a reality. We must push for it. Gareth suggested that all these politicians should be driven around in a bajaj.
Yeah.
A what?
Yeah. You know those little yellow things?
Those ones.
That'd be great.
That would be the best way to transport a politician.
Do you know those things don't have heaters in them?
Of course not.
Ah, yes. I would
in the
love
middle
it
of winter, that's good.
Especially in winter. Like, just put... Can you imagine Cupcake then, Uncle Pawsey?
Grace says the tears over the DA are glorious. I know you've been talking a lot about that the last couple of hours. What has happened on social media since last week when the DA and ANC announced they were working in a government of national unity? you give us your perspective.
So first of all, the fact that these two people, these two institutions who ostensibly hate each other are working together is already a miracle.
Yeah.
People are just so blasé about
this. But they hate it. Like the EFF supporters, the MK supporters, and a whole lot of media people are very, very angry because they're not involved.
But the fact that two enemies are coming together to sort of work for South Africa, we'll see if that happens or not, is already a miracle. But they signed this agreement at the last minute, thanks to Floyd Chivambu asking for a caucus meeting in the first assembly, right?
Saved the day without knowing it.
30 minutes.
And then last night, Fikile's, I think, was a Gator McKenzie from the PSS. Oh, we're joining the Government of National Unity. And then Zilla comes out and says, no, you know what? Read clause 19 that you signed, Fikile. Can't you read? It says there.
Oh, because Fikile is just going to bring him in through the back door.
Yeah. Mm. She says, if you bring anyone, you need consensus.
But are the PA not involved?
Not. So they've been invited, but they can't be accepted until the DA says yes, according to that document. So Helen Zilla comes out and says, I mean, Fikile, can't you read? What's wrong with you? Like, look, it says there.
So he didn't read. He didn't.
And she says, you forget you didn't win the election. You're not in power anymore.
Right.
This is a collective thing. So read what you
sign. But let's talk about the butthurt that Greg is talking about here, because this, I think, is probably something you're enjoying as much as I am. It's just fun to see how many people are really, really upset that the two biggest parties in the country are working together rather than just like dumping on each other, which they've done for 30 years and it's achieved nothing.
So I called this 2 years ago. I didn't say they're going to work together, but I said it's the best option to happen. And then on the same day, yesterday, 400 journalist jobs are lost because of newspapers.
Yeah, News 24 is going to can a whole bunch of its print publications.
And the worst part of all this, they can't learn to code because ChatGPT has, you know,
done that. It'll take that away from them as well.
It's ironic that regime change has been implemented. Now the journalists are fired. I don't know if that timing is coincidental or not.
Well, you've always been very outspoken about how shit you think most journalists in this country are.
Shit.
Yeah, of course. You're not going to change your tune now.
But I think anyone who disagrees with this on a fundamental basis, we don't know how it's going to work out. So I'm not saying it's Wakanda. I'm not saying it's utopian. But anyone who's against people coming together to try fix South Africa is a traitor.
Yes.
Right? These people need to be sent somewhere and shot in the head. Simple as that.
Okay.
Simple as that. And I hold no water for the DA or the IFP or any of these people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But for once, if you want democracy, you got it good and hard. I'm not a Democrat at all. But if you want it, you got it. You can't just be
an anarchist.
No, not anymore.
Not anymore? What do you know?
No, a far right.
Are you far right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Far right, how far right?
Franco's a bit soft.
Wow. Okay, well, there he is. And you're not afraid of that label either.
No, I mean, all I want is order, a border, the strong families, economic growth, and no degeneracy. I mean, this is so hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy that you sound crazy for saying that. Yeah. I think it's insane. Like, shouldn't thanks, that Jack. Be everyone's...
You can be the first black fascist.
There we go. We'll make it happen. Plus, I'm the correct height for it.
All right. There are lots and lots of comments here about Fikile in his yellow DG banana suit while Helen asks him if he can't read what he wrote. Yeah, listen, what a time to be alive. I think this is the most exciting time in South African, recent South African history.
Yeah, and I love it.
I'm very excited for what's going to take place. I kind of agree that the people who are moaning about this aren't really interested in the good of South Africa.
Mm-mm.
I don't think that that's too much to say.
Mm-mm.
I don't think that that's an outrageous statement.
No.
I don't think it's unmoored from reality. But it's definitely something that's driven a lot of people on social media absolutely insane over the last week.
But look at it this way. So, I mean, MK comes to the meeting and they have no mandate to do anything.
Yeah.
Right? They're like, okay, we'll go back and... they were four hours late. Like, it's just a nightmare,
They
right?
just don't know what they're
like
doing.
Not a serious party.
Yeah.
EFF comes in. Okay, we want this, this, and this. Okay, in return, what do we get? Nothing. Okay, not a serious party.
Right.
No.
The DA and IFP come in. What is the framework? They're looking at the framework, not positions. The positions will come within the framework, don't get me wrong. But they're looking at the composition of how this works rather than what the positions are.
Yeah.
So you've got two different mindsets about governance, which is the framework, and the other one, which is what can I get for myself?
Yeah, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
So I prefer the governance. If you're a Democrat, you should respect the governance aspect far more than the position aspect, I would think.
But, okay. Yeah. Well, there we go.
The things people say and what they do are very different.
Bitcoin Butt says, I always thought that politics in South Africa was a joke because of the disruptors. Now shit will happen because the country needs to work together. It'll be drama and jokes, but there'll be progress.
That's all we want. That's all we ask for.
We'll see.
And the official opposition now is the hard left. EFF, the Progressive Alliance, or whatever you call themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
MK, who's sort of far right a little bit, which I like, but they got like shitty economics. And the EFF, which are just a bunch of commies, laughing as something else. So the opposition, the official opposition in South Africa are like communists.
And what's happened to that?
Did you think that would happen in our lifetimes?
Yes. I said ANC and DA would get together, so obviously the rest would not be part
of
that.
So you either are with the people who are in charge now, which is this government of national unity, or you're with the right wing, which is MK, or you're with the left wing, which is EFF?
Yeah, I mean, MK is far more left wing than right. They've got good ideas. Like, do you know the idea about sending pregnant young women to Robben Island?
Yeah, I mentioned that once, and then I was quoted as being an MK supporter for the following 6 weeks afterwards. Because anytime I say anything, it's clickbait.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair
so enough. I just say less now.
But the official opposition now are these sort of hardcore race nationalists, which I find very interesting. As long as the liberals are now in power, and I detest liberals, and I detest communists. So, but at least the liberals sort of understand how to govern, which is, I suppose, a bit better than not, than having other people you can't govern.
We have to find the silver linings everywhere, seemingly. But all I know is, at the end of the day, there's one group watching over the other group and the other group is monitoring the other. I think, if anything, I hope they don't get into a stalemate to the point whereby nothing actually gets done. But at the end of the day, I think this is the best position we could possibly be in.
Richard says, Action SA must have snagged the DA's publicist with all their moaning recently. Yeah, that's a good point. there's so much more to talk about. Enjoy the inauguration today, everybody. If you are going to be watching it, paying attention to it, or if you're just going about your daily business trying to scrape together a living, that's also okay. Thanks, Roman. Thank you for sharing your stories about Russia.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing the videos that you produce out of this too. Jack, thanks for coming to spend time with us. And most importantly, thank you to you for being a part of the show this morning. We'll see you on Friday and tomorrow, Burning Platform, where we should have some interesting observations about the political goings-on. Have we got cabinet positions yet? Do we know what's happening?
They're going to be announced on Friday, but the DA needs 5 of them or 6 of them, and the IFP needs 3 of them for now, as far as I know.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. How many cabinet? We have 38 or something.
Ugh.
Apparently it's going to be expanded to 30.
No.
That's what they're saying. But
they cut them down to 16.
Yeah.
Sons of bitches. 16. Get it down.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. All right, well, we'll find out. It's all going to happen, whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, or whether you're paying attention or not. It's going to happen in the background. So live your life. Carry on. You have better things to do. Go to work today and make a difference. Cheers, everybody. Bye.